All right, Nonpro back, talking about Picard. First episode has dropped. We just watched it. What do we think, folks? Al, unfortunately, I'm here with Al. Not unfortunately, I'm here with Al. Sorry about that, Al. But unfortunately, Al, you did miss the 10 minutes of this, but we recapped it as stupidly as we could.
Yep.
And it's Pete and I in the room, Frank.
Yeah, unfortunately,
so,
with me.
Yeah, yeah, that's the unfortunate part. So, what did we think about it? I thought it was pretty interesting.
It certainly grabbed my attention pretty hard. I'm invested.
I'm on board.
Yeah, I am.
I like this. I'm very curious to see where this goes.
I love Patrick Stewart, Sir Patrick Stewart's just his read on this entire thing.
Yeah,
it's sweet and tragic, and almost hopeful. And he's like an exuberant fanboy at times. It's really fun to see him perform.
It's really good. He is like a highlight in here. And like, thank God he's used to great effect in the series. I was a bit worried it was going to be here's this show we have where Sir Patrick Stewart is our...
He does the intros and sits down for the rest of it.
Like, no, he's very much involved. And he's really good in it too. And thank God they didn't try to like make him something he's not. Like, he very clearly is like an older character.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Huge hat tip to Sir Patrick, because I mean, he's obviously he's had years with this role, but he does such a phenomenal job of making you feel like Picard is a real person.
Yep.
Who has aged more than 20 years since we last saw him.
Yeah. Speaking of aging, the world itself, I mean, Star Trek has gone a long way. So it started off being pretty optimistic, right? It's a optimistic vision of the future, created at a time when people maybe weren't so optimistic about our future.
Yeah.
In the 60s. And then through its various incarnations and the reboots and what have you, this is maybe one of the more dystopian looks at Star Trek.
Somewhat.
Still keeping that kind of futuristic feel, but like, it is now a world dealing with... Oh, we should say this at this point. Spoilers. Full spoilers. We are going to be talking about this episode entirely. But it's talking about a universe that posits that synthetic life, androids like Data, are outlawed because they cannot be trusted. It's a sci-fi trope. Mm-hmm. And it's one you wouldn't kind of expect from Star Trek, but here it's embraced.
I don't know if I would say that. I think this is the second time Star Trek has done something like this.
Oh?
There's the whole ban on essentially just kind of like any sort of a genetic modification, to the point that if you are not considered a citizen, if you have been genetically modified within...
That's interesting how that moved in time.
Because like, the eugenic wars that they talk about before, and how like, they're like, okay, well now they can't be that, we can't involve them, and like they can't... They're not citizens,
right?
If you have that happen.
And so initially when the eugenics war, in the original series, when eugenics were brought up as a negative, I think that was optimistic.
It was.
Right?
But how over time it's slowly... Yeah.
And then eventually like having control over your own body and your own destiny became, I think, a little dystopian. That's interesting how that changed, the read of that changed.
Yeah, it's a very interesting thing. I think Star Trek tends to handle fairly well, which is taking the things that seem like they're 100% positive at first, and then eventually looking at the other side and saying, well, maybe there's a downside to what we've done.
Yeah. True science fiction, right?
Yeah.
Amazing. And really beautiful cinematography, beautiful set design.
How often did you guys say, man, I want to buy his wine?
I want Chateau Picard.
A little fun joke. What's your favorite little moments from this first episode that we could bring up?
I love that he named the dog number one.
Yep. Yeah, it was really good. I liked that a lot. All the little callbacks, the banner in...
That was my favorite, Captain Picard Day.
Yeah, I love that. That was great. It's sweet and compelling. So, a couple of things. The Daystrom Institute is brought up a couple times in this.
Yeah.
That's a reference. I know that's a reference to something.
Yeah, the Daystrom Institute is a robotics and artificial intelligence institute. Research institute.
But it's not just brought up in this episode.
No. I just wanted to, you know, let people who haven't seen it know what we're talking about, or to refresh people's memory. But it is named after Dr. Richard Daystrom, who appeared in the original series.
Okay, cool.
As a robotics genius at the time.
Oh, neat.
He's basically considered the Albert Einstein of robotics.
All right, yes. In the future.
And there were numerous callbacks to him in the Next Generation.
I think that's probably what I'm remembering. Yeah. I think it's name dropped a lot.
Yeah, there's the Daystrom Award, particularly in Measure of a Man, where they were exploring whether or not Data counted as a citizen.
Oh, yeah. All right, cool. Yes.
So he's very deeply woven into the ideas behind here.
So what else is there? They were talking about the Romulan supernova. Now, am I right? Maybe out of nowhere of this. Is this the rebooted Star Trek universe? Is that Vulcan that was destroyed in the reboot
in the Kelvin timeline? Vulcan is destroyed back in like Kirk era. In the timeline we're in here, this is post Romulus like getting decimated by the supernova. This is not in the timeline where Nimoy
Spock.
Thank you. I can remember Leonard Nimoy. I couldn't remember Spock. But Spock goes back in time, and like we're the timeline he left, not the timeline he arrived.
Okay,
in.
I got it. All right.
This is. The Romulan supernova is something that happens after Star Trek Nemesis.
Oh, okay. Did we ever see that in anything? I don't think we did.
I believe this is the first time it's mentioned.
Okay. Yeah. All right, cool.
There's been reference to it in, like, the old online Star Trek RPG.
Oh, wow.
Where it was... That all took place in this timeline, where the Klingon Empire was regaining popularity again because the Romulans were planet was destroyed, and it was like... There was a lot of stuff that was going... It was interesting. That's the old Star... God, that was like almost 5-6 years ago. No, from over 10 years ago.
That's really crazy. I did not... Wow. That's interesting that they used that as a... we said interesting like 30 times in a row. But it was.
Everything about this is interesting.
And I do like the... The end, the fact that, and I wasn't sure about what was going to happen, to be honest. I thought maybe we were getting a alternate timeline, and this is explaining how Borgs came about, how the Borg came about, but apparently that's not true.
This cube that it seems like the Romulans are building.
Yeah.
That was my reaction at first, too. I was like, is this the origin of the Borg? Did the Romulans create the Borg?
Which I thought makes sense, but
then... And then I realized that, no, this is way after the Borg were introduced.
Yeah.
Although, I believe we've established that the Borg have access to time travel technology.
Right, that's true.
So I wonder if the Borg were... I don't think we ever really got into the origins of the Borg.
I think it's other than they mentioned.
Other than they were originally from the Delta Quadrant, that's the only thing we know, is that they were...
Right, which could also just mean that's where they first started Borging out from.
Yeah, that the cube ended up in the Delta Quadrant somehow.
And there's some great performances throughout this thing. I think my only, just so I'm not completely fanboying about this, it was a little heavy-handed with the exposition for a first episode at times.
At times.
Allison Pill and Patrick Stewart were just sort of like sitting down going, anyways, this is what's happening with androids. Can't make those. They're illegal. You can make a genetic one. Yes, the science on that is totally cromulent. And then it's just, I was like, all right, fine, whatever. Just get through it.
Yeah.
It wasn't so much that it really bothered me, though.
Yeah, it was.
It was like, okay, I was interested in everything they were saying.
It was very Star Trek, though. I feel like that's a trope that they've been guilty of before, that you can kind of go, that's cute.
Yeah, yeah.
I will say, like, I did like the interview scene that I kind of walked in a little early on. A little bit before they started it. It gave a lot of good that was how you deliver exposition.
That was a very good info dump in there.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Because like they're learning about like how he was trying to evacuate Romulans, and like how him being away was when the synthetics attacked Mars, and it was just like
so much world building, because you've got the interviewer who's saying, you've saved X many Romulan lives. He's like, no, just lives. Their lives. Yeah. You already know a little bit about this post event. Federation, the world as it sees itself after sort of bailing on the Romulans and closing themselves off after the attack on Mars.
Now, given some of the storylines in like Voyager and DS9, it's almost hard to say, but this seems to be the Federation after it's lost its innocence.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, that's a little...
Like it's debatable how innocent they were to begin with, but...
I think that's fair enough to say. Like, part of me looks at this and, like, this is a little darker than I'd expect Star Wars, because there was always the concept. Although, even in the original trilogy, the Federation isn't always, like, clean hands, right? Al, you look like you're about to say a joke, and you're not going
you
to.
You said Star Wars and original trilogy, so like
I caught the trilogy, but I missed Star Wars.
No, you did say it.
We might as well sign off.
We're going to excommunicate you from your Frank.
I got no credibility left. I meant Star Trek.
I'm afraid we're going
to... We just finished recording a Star Wars episode. Give me a break.
I don't care, Frank. We're going to have to report this to the Nerd Pope.
Yeah, all right. He's going to be so atheist about it. But yeah, Star Trek, an original series, had the... and I almost called the Federation the Empire a couple of times. I'm positive of that.
Oh, Lord.
But
it is... I agree. It is a Federation that's sort of lost its innocence. And like, But we watched it... But we watched that happen. You go through DS9, there's a lot of stuff that went on during that where, like, they had to get used to not just rival powers, but greater powers. And also, this is post-Borg. Let's also remember that. Like, this isn't just that we've had one instance of synthetics that have come and, like, caused serious issue. That was the whole, like, what was it, Wolfram 359 or whatever it was, where the, like...
Wolf 359.
Yeah, and that was... terrible, like that, like, you know, not millions, but there were a lot of lives that were lost, and I can understand where the Federation is coming from on this, like, not necessarily saying I agree, but like, just like what happened with the eugenics wars, this isn't unprecedented for them to be like, well, this is a bad, so we're just going to stop it because even our own did it. So now it's just time to, you know.
Plus, Mandalorians do not trust the droid army. Sorry. couldn't even get it out.
Roger, roger.
Anyway.
Yes. Overall, interesting. I'm always hesitant about people who, like, about stories. We haven't really told many stories in Star Trek recently that weren't flashbacks. Weren't like prequels, I should say.
Because even Discovery's still taking place in the Kelvin timeline.
And I feel like I'm always a little hesitant on what like, you know, I don't want to know that the Federation is evil. It has a really useful purpose in fiction to be something aspirational to some degree. So I'd rather not hear that, but I do like measured responses, similar to what Pete said before. It's like you show one side and then you show what the other side could be like in either extreme. I think that could potentially be really cool.
What do you think about this new format for a Star Trek series? In that this is pretty much every Star Trek that we've had so far has been, you know, a series of connected adventures. Each week pretty much is a self-contained, we're doing this exploratory thing. This is much more of a story-driven series, it looks like.
Yeah.
That this is going to be, there's one story that they're telling.
I think we've been pushing towards that since at least Deep Space Nine. You've got these big arcs in Deep Space Nine. You've got Enterprise had even big arcs in it.
Yep.
Eventually, maybe not the first season, but eventually big arcs. And I think Discovery also does.
It does. It's a bit more episodic.
No one will ever know because no one watches Discovery.
That's what the other thing I'm saying. No, not that. That the CBS All Access thing is still, for whatever reason, a bar of entry to me. It's too pricey. Yeah. This is a thing I can only watch.
And there's not enough really
friends
there besides, like, do I want to watch?
I don't know about that. That's my biggest question mark. I feel like commercials after a certain amount of time might be the best way to do it. I don't know. Yeah. We're not going to figure that out.
We're not here to litigate the streaming wars.
Yeah, they would never listen to us anyways. But yeah, Overall, I was impressed, and it's nice to watch something that it's nice to watch sci-fi again. That's again not a knock against Star Wars, although kind of like it's nice to watch something that's where it's like I can.
And this is very just straight sci-fi. Yeah.
There are consequences to the things we are world building about.
Yep.
As opposed to it's just like, oh, that's space magic, which we've talked about in the podcast. It's probably available right now. If you look at it on Non-Productive, you'll find it one where I'm like, eh, he survives because of space magic. That's fine. Here, I don't want Data to survive because of space magic, although fractal positronic neurons might be the closest thing we can
get. Maybe that's where they found his memories at, is like in a Borg cube somewhere.
That's actually cool. Point. Yeah, that's a nice one. It's going to be interesting.
There was a brief flash in those coming this season. Was that Data all Borged up? Or
there was somebody.
There was somebody
sure.
all Borged up. For a brief second there, I thought it was Data's gold eyes or
seeing
whatever color his
Jerry
eyes are.
Ryan in this, in her 7 of 9 getup, made me realize, oh, wait, no, this is not going to be the Kelvin timeline of the origin of the Borg in this. Yeah. Although I still think with time travel, you never know. Maybe this is the origin of the Borg. Although it seems less satisfying because
I agree.
We would have invented the Borg knowing what the Borg were. Or we, Romulans, invented the Borg, knowing the Borg. Yeah, that just feels like a my bad.
And the Romulans had just as much to lose from the Borg as anyone else. And in fact, they were one of the first ones to like start losing colonies, if memory serves, during the beginning of it. So like, it feels very awkward for that to be a Romulan thing.
If you know, your solar system going supernova, wiping out a huge part of your population and the rest of the galaxy turning their backs on you,
you might think better survive as the Borg than any. Yeah,
that might just drive you to look at this one possible avenue you've seen before work to save your species.
Fair.
But by and far my favorite part of this episode was when Picard notices his painting and notices that it's his tea drinking guest is what he keeps referring to. I can't remember her name.
Daj.
He sees that and. And the three of us watching it kind of looked and we were like, sort of. Like, yeah, it kind of looks like her, I guess, if you squint. You're really pushing it. Like, it's close.
Looks like, I don't know, some android that doesn't really have a good grasp on humanity painted her. Maybe.
So, yes, if you're an android who doesn't have a good grasp on humanity, why don't you subscribe to the Non-Productive Network and help us out for the next few days or so. We're going to be doing our beginning of the year survey. Just go to non-productive.com/survey. Tell us about what you like or else we'll never review Picard again.
Good night, everybody.
That's a threat.
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.